when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Oh, dear, most precious white Christian brothers and sisters out there, we have a dynamite guest on for you. I'm going to bow out. We have our two excellent staff members here. They're going to be doing an interview with a lady. I'm not even going to say her name or anything. I think Sister Nancy found her, looked her up. I think Sister Monica, since she has a nationality in common with this lady. I guess we'll just let Sister Monica start us off. And then she'll be waving Nancy in and out, or vice versa, as we go to answer questions to the dear guests. But go ahead, Sister Monica, if you will, introduce this guest. And I'm going to shut up now and bring y'all in out of the break. So go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you, Nancy, for coordinating this and setting it up. And I have had email dialogues with this woman for quite some time. And so I know that she has her eyes wide open about what's going on in the world, and she has a very interesting history. Her name is Herta Weiss, and her family stems from an area of Yugoslavia, what they called Yugoslavia. And I just only know a very brief outline, really, of Herta's story. And so I would like you, Herta, to set this up for us in giving a little bit of background to that area, because like I was just asking in the break, like, it wasn't just your family, and you have a German family, you're of German ancestry, but there you were in Yugoslavia. Yes. So many people don't realize how many parts of Europe had huge German communities, not just communities, but towns and villages and regions. Of course, Germany brutally attacked World War I and World War II, and their territory shrunk and shrunk and shrunk. So why don't you give us some background now, and welcome to this show, Herta Weiss.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here with you. First of all, German populations were in all of the Balkan states. That was Yugoslavia, Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria, and even Slovenia, which is now a state of its own, used to be part of Yugoslavia. Anyway, the Germans migrated down there from southern Germany primarily during the 1700s, during the reign of Empress Maria Theresia. And she reigned from 1740 to 1780. So during that time, many, many Germans moved down. Some of them are on the Danube, others are with horses and carts, and just like the pioneers in America, they moved down, and they were given by the empress, they were given some things to get started, like a plow, an axe, a saw, because they were essentially going into a swampy area next to the Danube. And they had to clear the land for the most part. So the first few years, it was nothing but death for them. There is an author by the name of Adam Miller Gudrun.
Adam Miller Gudrun, did you say?
Gutenbrunn.
Oh, Gutenbrunn, okay. Just wanted to
he wrote a book called The Großer Schwabenzug, because that's what we were, Schwaben, like in Bavaria, there's a lot of Schwaben there. Anyway, and he wrote the book about the great Swabian Trek. Okay, so but this goes way back. I have an ancestor that was back in my family tree to 1758. So that's how long some of the people, but of course many of them came much later. They came in dribs and drabs. So we were not far from Belgrade, about 30 kilometers or 30 miles, I forgot which, our small town, and it was primarily German. We had maybe 20% Serbian and 80% German. Our government in the town was German. The schools were German. The church, we were Catholic. The church was all German, of course. And so I was born during the year of 1937. And my father actually served under the Yugoslavian king. I believe his name was King Peter for about 3 years. And then he was, of course, a veteran from that. But in 1941, when Germany marched into Yugoslavia under Hitler, he was drafted because he was German, you know. And many of his school friends and most of the German men from that area went into the war to fight Tito's communists in the mountains of Yugoslavia. And he was wounded, had his left eye shot out. Of course, it was put back in Garmisch-Partenkirchen in Germany. They flew him up there. Then he came home because he had deserted in 1944 in October, because they knew at that point that the war was over. So he came home and he knocked on the door, and mother, of course, had the house darkened because there was air raids going on and everything. So she was afraid to open the door. He finally just said, "It's me, open up." And so she opened the door and he came in and he said, "I'm home and we have to leave." She said, "What do you mean we have to leave?" He said, "We heard that the natives are massacring our people in the fields." We were primarily a farming community with some tradesmen. My father was, for instance, a furrier and fur tanner, like his father was. And he used to make beautiful sheepskin coats out of sheepskins, you know, like Sherpa-looking types. And so and he used to make them like floor length for sleds in the wintertime. And we had a farm, you know, with a long stretched house. He had his own little building where his workshop was. Anyway, so we had to leave. After he came home, 3 days later, we were on the train because most of our German people were leaving. Those that didn't went through terrible, terrible times. And we got on the train and we went north, you know, by the Hungarian border, then we got attacked. It was air raid.
Herta, and, I'll just, Herta, can I just intervene here?
Sure.
I think that sure. You had said to me that, was this the last chance to leave? Was this the last train? Did you mention that to me before?
It was the last train out of our town, yes. And in fact, they had two trains put together with two engines because they knew they were going to have to separate them and have them go different dispositions, different destinations, which is what happened. So by the time we got to the Hungarian border with this long train, and it went very slow. We had stopped in every town on the way up there to pick up more refugees, you know, people that wanted to leave. And we got to the border and we were attacked by American strafing planes. One-year-old man stayed on the plane.
I think you said that was October 1944 that when you all left.
Yeah.
But was that an open cattle? Were they open cattle cars without rooms?
Oh, yeah,
on
I told you that. I forgot. I forgot to mention that. I told you that before. Yeah, it was a cattle car with no roof on, so we had to put a tarp on top. And, of course, the bundles we piled on there were all whatever we could carry. And there were a number of our family members, my uncle and his wife, and they had lost just one son in Holland already, and the other one was still young. He was like a preteen at that time. And my uncle used to be a cloth merchant in town, and my other uncle, who was missing in action, he was a carpenter. And we had just tarps on top, and this was
Miss Herta, we have raining. To go to a quick break. Hold that thought. Don't lose your place. We got to go to our first commercial break. We'll be right back.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, if those people, referring to the dictatorial federal government, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
My name is Christian Knuckles. I prophesy there will be no revival until the church leadership stops lying to the people. I'm the first soldier of the spiritual body of Christ, the Lion of Judah, the Confederate Church of Christ. I'm here to declare the lion will lie down with the lamb when the lying stops. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries and brought to you by ConfederateChurchOfChrist.com.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
In the morning. Smells like victory.
The folks are born, made to wave the flag. Cool, they're red, white, and blue.
Dear Blood River Radio family, we're going to go right back to our precious guest, but I would like to just take this little reminder to remind you, if Mr. Herta said that on this train hauling innocent civilians that didn't even have a roof on it, we hear constantly the Holocaust, the poor Jews who survived the Holocaust. You're listening to a true Holocaust survivor. She is a white lady, a Christian lady, and the white Christian Germans were pursued by like these stinking Jews. They were pursued like hyenas after an impala. Another thing too, it was the good Americans. You know, we're always good. The American troops are always good, but they strafe this train full of innocent civilians. So go ahead back to you, Miss Monica. Bring Miss Herta back in, if you will.
Actually, I'll just hand it right back to you, Herta. Please carry on.
Yeah. Well, I forgot to tell you, before we actually got to the Hungarian border, the train stopped and there were some farmers outside and they had some cabbages. To this day, I love cabbage because we have not had a hot meal. So my grandmother can cook that cabbage in the door of the railroad car on a little I forgot what the kind of stove we had. It was a little portable stove. Anyway, that was mm-hmm. no good. Anyway, then after we were attacked on that train, we stood there for a while because they had to wait for another engine because our engine got all shut up and it wasn't functioning properly. So then when we finally got the engine, then we, during the night, they were clanking around, moving the railroad cars. They were uncoupling and coupling them, and you know how that makes a banging noise. Anyway, when we finally got settled down, and I didn't know at that time what was going on, I found out later that they had separated the two trains, and one was going to Austria, and ours was going to Germany. So we went north and ended up in the county or district of whatever they call it, Thuringen in Germany, in a town called Heiligenstadt. We stopped in the railroad station, and the station master came and told us, you can't go further, excuse me, because the tracks were all bombed. They were all mangled. So he said, there's no place I can give you to go and live. He said, do you know what you want to do? But, you know, my uncle had taken in a German soldier in Yugoslavia that had been wounded, and they nursed him back to health. And so that guy told him, if you ever need help from me, just let me know. I will do whatever I can for you. Sure enough, the station master told us that the telegraph was still working. So my uncle telegraphed the town where that farmer lived. In outside Vienna.
Mm-hmm. And
he said, come, all of you.
Oh my,
I'm sorry.
I know it was a lot of people, wasn't it? It wasn't just your family. It was five families that you told
five
me.
Five families he was in one railroad car, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
What a man.
Sure. Well, no, that train going back south to Austria had a roof on it. Hello. So we arrived in Austria, outside Vienna, in a town called Schwechat, where the railroad station was. And there he was with his long hay wagon. And we all piled on to that hay wagon. And he brought us to the small farm town. And he found a home for every one of us. Mostly the family. When I say family, I meant women and children. The men were either in the military, or they were missing in action, or some of them were already fallen in the war. And mm-hmm. So my father, we had to hide him because he was a deserter. Mm-hmm. But if he hadn't come home, we would never have survived. If he hadn't come home and took us out of there.
Basically, he...
How many children were in your family?
Well, it was me. I was 7 and a half. My brother, Irving, who was 3. And my mother was pregnant with my brother, Nick, over the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And...
I just wanted to comment about your father. He rescued his family, which is, you know, I mean, a person could debate about being a deserter, but he rescued his family, which I think is...
That's exactly. Yeah. If it hadn't been for him, none of us would have lived.
That's right.
And he wouldn't have lived, considering what happened to some of these men in Yugoslavia, knowing what happened to them. So anyway, yeah. You know, I get a little nervous, so I forget some of the things that I meant to say.
That's okay.
But I'm glad you reminded me.
Yeah, maybe at this point, like Nancy, you had brought this up, that, you know, for those who didn't make it out and the treatment that...
That's what we learned when we got to Austria.
Right. So I don't. Would you like?
First of all, we found out that Tito had disowned us all. He had made our citizenship null and void. First of all, and
after living there for several hundred years.
Yeah, our ancestors are, yeah.
Yeah.
But he gave all our property to his loyal communist friends. My cousin went back a few years later. Peter was still alive. And he went there. He took pictures of our house, including their own house, too. And he was by that time married. He's the guy that was the younger one, where the older one had already died in the war. And I have that picture, and I treasure it, because I forgot to tell you, before we left Yugoslavia, my father took me by the hand, and we went back in the house. We walked back to the stables, and he was feeding the horses and the cows and threw some stuff out for the geese and the chickens and all that. And the tears were running down his face.
Of course it was.
And you were just seven.
And so I asked him, Papa, why are you crying? He said, because I will never see any of this again.
Yeah.
Dang.
And the house had been built by his father back in the 1800s sometime. And we left everything behind. Never saw any of it again. And so in Austria, we lived in that small farm town, but then we were bombed. We had, in that small town, 5 bombs hit that town, including our farmhouse where it was not far from where our cellar was. We were in the cellar because my father, again, had the presence of mind that if we ever had to get down the cellar fast, he put a rope up. It was one of those winding stone stairwells, you know, in the typical old European cellar, you know, granite stone steps. And he was the last one down, and he let himself down on the rope, and all hell broke loose. We were sitting on piles of, I think, rhubarbs or whatever, or potatoes. I can't remember what. And I'm looking up, and the ceiling was cracking, and the sand came drizzling down. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, it was dead silent, and my father went up the steps and tried to open the cellar door, and we were up half the cellar door. We were bombed in, I mean, with debris. And so he had to clear the way, and we finally got out. And oh, my goodness, it was horrible. There was a cow stuck between the two farmhouses, because the farmhouses in Austria are very close together. There's just enough room for rain to go through between. And there was a cow stuck between the two houses, and she was pregnant.
Oh.
They had to kill that poor cow
and
then cut her out of there so that we ate it, you know. But the point was, the devastation was unbelievable. Across the street, the butcher's little buggy was on top of his roof, and so. But then... It was 1945 already, and the Russians came.
Oh, God.
I have nothing against the Russians these days because they're not the communists like they were then.
Right.
But these were Asiatics, and they were very, very dumb. They didn't know what the radio was. We had a table radio, and... he started fiddling with the dial, and then static noise came out, so he shot it with his rifle.
Oh, my God.
He didn't know what it was.
Totally primitive.
Yeah, it's just very, very. And they were always drunk. Drunk with real strong, I don't know if it was vodka or just pure alcohol. I have no idea, but they were always drunk.
Ms. Herter, we have to go to another quick commercial break, and we'll be back to you, Ms. Herter, as soon as we come back from this break. Be right back, folks.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News. I'm Corey Myers. In his New York State civil fraud trial, former President Trump has been ordered to pay more than $350 million. USA's John Schaefer has details.
He's also facing a 3-year ban on conducting business in New York State. The judge also fined his sons and imposed a 2-year business ban on them in New York. Allegations against Trump include artificially inflating his net worth to secure better loan terms. Trump contends that the case is politically driven and argues that since the banks profited, there's no victim. His legal team says they will appeal.
A former FBI informant facing charges for allegedly lying about President Biden's involvement in his son Hunter's foreign business dealings. President Biden confirming the ex-informant's falsehoods and urged the House Republicans to drop their impeachment inquiry. Alexander Smirnov falsely claiming that executives of Ukrainian energy firm Burisma admitted to hiring Hunter Biden to access then-Vice President Biden. The indictment is a setback for House Republicans, who have used Smirnov's allegations in their push to impeach the president. Egypt is reportedly building a refugee camp near the Gaza border in anticipation of potential conflicts if Israel attacks the southern city of Rafah. Despite Egypt's denial of preparing for refugees in the Sinai Peninsula, sources indicate to Reuters that an area is being readied near Gaza with basic facilities to shelter Palestinians if they flee across the border. The upcoming crewed rocket launch from Florida's Space Coast is scheduled for next month. NASA announcing that 3 astronauts and a cosmonaut will embark on their journey to the ISS aboard a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket on March 1st. This is USA News.
The inventor and CEO of MyPillow is always looking for ways to solve everyday problems. Have you ever picked up a towel set because it felt really soft in the store, but then when you go to use it, it's not very absorbent? It's basically a towel that's leaving you out to dry. That's why MyPillow has developed the MyPillow towels. Towels that work. I know, it's mind-blowing. Towels that actually dry you. The 6-piece towel set includes 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, and 2 washcloths. They come in a variety of colors, and right now you can receive a 6-piece set for only $39.98 with promo code USA. Go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the radio listener special. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. To receive this amazing offer on the 6-piece set of MyPillow towels, just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special, and enter promo code USA or call 800-951-8175. That's MyPillow.com, promo code USA.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
This is Michael Hill, Chief of the League of the South. I listen to Blood River Radio, and you should too. In fact, you should be telling your friends, your family, and your associates to listen to Eddie Miller and the good folks at Blood River Radio. They stand resolutely for the preservation of white civilization, what we once called Christendom, and they stand against the ongoing campaign of white genocide. In these trying and uncertain times, it's more important than ever to speak and act in defense of our God, our people, and our civilization. Blood River Radio speaks the truth and speaks it boldly. I've been on the show many times as a guest, and I'm very proud of my association with you. May our just cause prevail. Hail victory.
Blood River Radio family. I'd like to interject our beliefs here. Miss Herta was talking about how her father could be labeled as a deserter, but it's my view and our view that that was the Almighty God with infinite wisdom and mercy. It was divine intervention that he sent that precious man out of a front that there was suicide to stay there. He sent him back. God sent him back, this man, Herta's father, to do a wonderful thing to rescue his family. They would have surely have died. They had surely been slaughtered had he not deserted and came back and led his family out of danger. And also, people, keep in mind, this Miss Herta, she is a true Holocaust survivor, and she actually lived through the Second World War. She was only about 7 years old, I believe, and the time period she's talking about. It's a 1944, 1945. So go ahead, Miss Herta. Go ahead and continue on, dear.
Well, yes, the Mongols came and they actually took a pig and slaughtered it on the kitchen floor in the farmhouse, and there was blood all over. Then they made us go upstairs from the cellar. One of them came down with a lantern and talked to us in Russian. Of course, my father spoke Serbian. So he knew what they wanted. They wanted us to go upstairs, and we had to line up against the wall. They had found an accordion case in one of the farmhouses, and they wanted the accordion. My father had to take them clear all around town to find an accordion to give them. Otherwise, they would have shot us. They literally had their Kalashnikov, or whatever you call it, trained on all of us. Women, children, you name it, the farmer, his wife, his daughter, and that's another one, the daughter of the farmer. My father had to speak up for her. They wanted to rape her. But anyway, so where am I?
Oh. Yeah, the people who came were not, they didn't look like us. These were these Mongols. They were really quite primitive,
yeah,
you
they were
saying earlier. So these were
very
these
primitive,
hordes.
And they wanted watches. They constantly wanted watches. They had watches from the wrist up to the elbow on their arms.
Oh, my goodness.
And they were very, very primitive, as you said. Yes, very primitive. But the ones that came afterwards, they were like the pastor said, they were white Russians, and they were a lot more cultured, cultivated or whatever. They were much nicer. In fact, we had one of them that sat on the farm equipment with us children, and he taught us Russian songs. Yeah. And he brought us candy. I don't know where he stole them, but he brought us candy, lots of candy.
Herta, let me ask you something. Yeah. This village in Austria was the farms that had been offered to you for the five families that came off the train in Germany. Yeah. In other words, they had moved, they had volunteered to take you all due to the goodness of your uncle. So this is what ended up happening to these families. They were bombed by the Allies, I guess, or by the Russians, or maybe by both.
Well, my uncle, as I said, was a cloth merchant, and in Germany, yet with the station master, he gave that station master a bolt of cloth for a suit or whatever, for giving us the chance to get on the telegraph and telegraph Austria, you know, and my one aunt who was on the other train. Going to Austria before we went to Germany, they ended up in a concentration camp called Mauthausen in Austria.
Mauthausen, yes.
And, yeah. They were there, and, oh, my God, they had bed bugs. They were so uncomfortable, and they had really bad treatment from those that took over the camps, and I think you know who they were that went over and took over the camps.
And yeah. What year would that, Herta, what year was that that they ended up in the concentration camp there?
Well, as soon as we got there, because they didn't have the luck to get into the farmhouse with all these wonderful farmers taking us in. They ended up in Mauthausen, my aunt.
But this is really important for the listeners to hear this, because, you know, we only always hear about the poor Jews who were put into these camps, and, you know, the false story about these being death camps and whatnot. But really, what happened after, well, I guess for different camps, it would have happened at different times, but these camps were then administered, or the administration switched over to those who are always crying victimhood, and they were then...
Absolutely.
What's that?
That's right. That's exactly what happened. Certainly in Czechoslovakia, they were taking the Germans who had lived in the Sudetenlands and other areas of Czechoslovakia, and they were imprisoning them. So they probably used the same so-called camps that the Germans had used.
Yeah. That's what happened. Some of our people, they were put into those concentration camps, and they literally starved them. And, of course, there was no medication or whatever. And our people were in bad shape.
But there's no Hollywood. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Herta, but just really, this is a really important point. There's no Hollywood movies ad nauseum showing us these scenes of when the tables were turned, and it was actually the German people, the German refugees, those who had been expelled from their homelands, the homelands that they had for many, many years, hundreds of years. They were expelled and then ended up in these camps. And then the people running the camps were actually the Jews. Carry on, Herta. I just needed to make that point, just to make it really clear, because we have to actually really speak clearly about this, because this is not talked about. Like, this is not what the mainstream media talks about. The mainstream media doesn't go into this. They don't make movies about this.
No.
This is not common knowledge.
There's never been a movie made about anything like that.
No.
Some of our surviving people from my area there have written books. And I've seen them advertised. You can't find them anymore now. They're probably all banned. But I saw and I read a couple of them about their experiences. And when we found out what all happened to our people that were left behind, as a matter of fact, there was an incident at Bromberg, not Bromberg, that town at the border of Austria, from between Yugoslavia and Austria, where our people were trying to escape from Yugoslavia into Austria, and the British made them go back, and they were all killed.
Mm. Oh.
Got it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the British made them go back. The same
and
with
yet...
some of the Russian soldiers that had joined the German army. Like there was one commander by the name of Vlasic, I think. Yeah, I think it was Vlasic, V-L-A-S-I-K or something like that. He was the leader of some of these Russians that had joined the German military, and they were sent back, and they were all exterminated.
That's what Eisenhower did under Keel Hall.
Correct. Operation Keel Hall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see, and these people who joined the German army, they were fighting against the communism, and communism is Judaism. Judaism is communism. They knew what communism was, and so they were fighting against communism. And then, of course, when they were sent back, the communists killed them.
That's right. Yeah.
Even some of the Yugoslavian Muslims, because there were some Muslims in Yugoslavia, they had joined the German military too. And some of them really perished after the war.
That's a little known fact that the Hitler even gave the Muslims as a gift. He gave them little Korans.
Oh, yes. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Yugoslavia is practically a mass grave, the area where we came from. Mm. And I used to have a little book, and I misplaced it. I cannot find it. I had two books. One I got from Munich was called The Leidensweg, the German... Oh, I understand.
Ms. Herta, we have one more break, and we'll come right back to you as soon as we... This is our final break of the hour. Be right back, people.
What is great about America? Ask an Immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing, and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Dear Blood River Radio family, just in case somebody's just not coming in, I'd just like to reiterate, we have Miss Herta Weiss is a true Holocaust survivor. She lived through the Second World War, Yugoslavia, with Austria and Germany. She saw the horrors of war. Her people were in concentration camps. What? You're saying that Christian people were in concentration camps? Well, we'll let Ms. Herta tell you more about this story. Continue on, Ms. Herta.
You were just talking about the two books. Do you want to carry on?
Yeah, the one book, I don't know what I did with it, but it had all the memorials in Yugoslavia. There were huge cemeteries that people that had moved to Germany came back after Tito was gone and started making memorials for our people there. And they had, you know, being Catholic, they made these beautiful headstones and some, literally some buildings where they had the walls covered with names of those that perished there. It's like a mass grave over there in some of these areas. And I don't know what I did with my book. And I had another book that was called The Leidensweg, der Deutschen in Yugoslavia. I got that from Munich. It's still available there, I believe. But
And der Leidens, Leidensweg is like the suffering. How would you translate that,
yes.
Hertha? The suffering,
yeah,
of
the suffering way of the Germans in Yugoslavia.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's yeah, and just to go back to what Eddie, what you're calling Hertha, and I said this earlier too, you know, the real survivor here is who is talking to us today about her story. But for just to make sure there's no confusion for the listener, when we hear the word Holocaust, we automatically think of the Jews. And so the picture is inverted. This is a German woman, and all these Germans who were actually genocided. That might be, you know, a word to use. So because the Holocaust, we falsely are just thinking about the Jews, and a Holocaust actually means burnt offering. And
yes.
So I guess we should talk about the victims of all those cities that were firebombed. Those were actually Holocaust victims in terms of being burnt offerings. And then there were the genocide of all these expellees, and Hertha's family is one of these many, many families. Millions of Germans were expelled from their old territories, their old lands.
So, I remember the name now, the town,
yes?
At the border of Austria and Yugoslavia. It was called Bleiberg, Bleiberg. That's where the massacre took place, because the British sent all those refugees back into Yugoslavia and they got killed.
You know, yeah. The British, when they sent them back, they must have known what the fate of these refugees would be, no? I mean, do you think they knew?
I would think so. I'm sure they knew what was going on down there.
Yeah.
I can't say for sure, but I think they would have had to.
Well, the advisors of the those who are making decisions, or you know, the people making the decisions or their advisors, they were always of that certain tribe that we're not allowed to name, lest we be called anti-Semitic, for which they are now making ever more laws forbidding anti-Semitism. And when we really dissect what is anti-Semitism, it is just pointing out what they are doing, pointing out factual history, facts about what this group of people, this tribe, is actually doing. That is called anti-Semitism.
Yes.
And they don't like it when...
I think,
yeah. Go ahead.
It would behoove all of us to literally study the word Semitism to find out what it actually means. Because the Jews in America are not Semites. They're just not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right. Right.
The Palestinians are more Semitic than the Jews, because the Jews are European. The Ashkenazi or Khazarian Jews are from Europe. They're from the Pale of Settlements of Russia, in that area.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. They converted in the year 700 or so, I think.
The history is quite. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Nancy.
No, I was just going to say the only Jews that can claim any connection to being Semites would be the Shepherdic Jews, and maybe some of the Jews that ended up remaining in Palestine, which has now been taken over by the Khazarian Jews, which came from the Asiatic parts of Russia or the Soviet areas. That's where they were, most of these Jews that occupy Israel now have no connections with the Semites.
No. The Sephardic, you're right. I couldn't remember the word. They're the only I would call the good Jews. Because they do believe in God, in one only God and all that. But the Khazarians, for the most part, are atheistic.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Satanic.
Yes.
You know, Miss Monica.
No, I was just going to add to that, satanic, like they worship their god, which is Satan, I guess you could say. But go ahead,
Lucifer.
Eddie.
I was just going to say, you know, last week or whatever it was, I was looking, we were talking about the Rothschild banking dynasty that started several hundred years ago. I was looking into it, and they proudly claim to be, get this, Ashkenazi Jews. They say we are of Ashkenazi Jews. And I'm sure y'all know the Ashkenazis, if I'm not mistaken. They originated out of Asia, and they converted over to Judaism somewhat 400, 500, 600 years ago. And so they're really not like you said, Semitic,
you know,
people at all.
I have to say that more recent readings and what I've been doing is, I think these Jews are—they all have some genetic similarities to each other, and it was a Jew himself that did put forward that theory of the conversion and all that. It was Arthur Koestler. He's a Jew himself. I would be careful about that theory, and I think it is a theory. So anyway, but I think that the Jews have a genetic component to them that makes them very different from us. And they are not us. And so they have interbred so much in the various host populations that they've parasited off of so that they look like their host population at times. And so that makes it more difficult for us to identify them. But I'm telling you, when you challenge their religion, being that of Holocaustianity, they all go tribal. I don't really see.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, they do. So that's a problem. And anyway, that's just my two cents on it. I don't want to, offend anybody that has a different view on these things. But it's just something that there may be more to this story than what we've been learning about this conversion and whatnot. Yeah.
Herschel, what happened after the bombing in this little area in Austria where you and your family were living?
Well, everybody got together and tried to close up the craters that were pretty deep and pretty wide and rebuild, We kids. We played in the lakes. That we had little ponds in town where the cows would come home and water, But we used to wait in there, and I cut my heel right open on something, and one of the boys was playing with gunpowder and blew up his arm up the elbow. He was crippled from then on, and it was one thing after another in those days. But every Sunday we went to church. The Bishop Innocent came out all the way from Vienna in order to confirm us.
Amazing.
Yeah.
The next time you come on, you talk about life in Vienna, because I know you
apologize. I have to apologize, but my phone is dying.
Oh, well, we are we're almost at the top of the hour, and we want to thank you so much, Herta, for sharing your story, and we would like to invite you back on to tell more, like Nancy says, your life in Vienna afterwards.
Yeah, okay, not a problem, I can come back, but now I have to go plug my phone in.
Thank you. Herta, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Herta.
Bye-bye.
And thank you, Nancy.
Thank you.
And thank you, dear Blood River Radio sisters, for putting this together. It was a marvelous, marvelous interview. If you want to call it enjoyment, I thoroughly enjoyed it, even though it was sad. We'll have to bring her back and talk about the post-war years. Well, people, I think you heard it. We've got 2 hours in the books, but now we're getting ready to pick up the bitter end of himself, Gene Andrews, in the third hour. So hang on to your seats, people. The ride's not over yet.